Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahulastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Richard's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. If you enjoy these, why not go to gofasterstripe.com/badges, buy a one-off badge for however much you want to pay, or buy a monthly badge and you get lots of extras like a secret channel with backstage stuff and other bits of film, a badge, entry into a secret draw, an email with lots of exciting extra stuff that other normal non-badge scum can't get. And that will really help us to make more stuff. If you're already subscribing, do check that you still are paying £1 a month, because once your credit card runs out, it may have stopped, as it has for many of you. Just a little tip for you, if you want to keep paying us, then we can keep making more. Anyway, let's sit back and listen to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is genuinely wondering whether all the events of 2016 are his fault. It's Richard Herring! Oh yeah, that's the walk. The walk on. That's the one. Look at me then. So, hello! Hello, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was in Milwaukee the other day with the Fonz, if you know the Fonz. He was around. I was talking to Richie Cunningham and Ralph Mouth, his mate. He hangs around with them. The Fonz doesn't call it this, but they have started calling it Rahulastapa, so I don't know what that means. They hang around with the Fonz, so I don't know what that means. A few people have pointed this out, that in the John Robbins podcast that I did, which we did on basically for the start of 2016. I think we recorded in 2015, but it went out as the New Year podcast. I said, yeah, come on 2016, do your worst. And it seems that 2016 has taken me up on that challenge. So I'm slightly worried that it's all my fault. Every day I hope we're less fucked. Every day we seem to be more fucked. So by the time this goes out, I think in August sometime, God knows what the country is going to be. What? He'll be dead by then. That is... I might be dead. I'm not famous enough to die. This is the week. The Tory party have
trying to get a new leader. Think back to then if you're listening at home. But there's a good way of... I came up on the day that the leadership was being announced, of a good way of remembering the names of all of the candidates for Tory leader. It was Gove may lead some crab to your Johnson or Hunt, which I was... I was quite pleased with that. And then Johnson, he dropped off, didn't he? That is the danger when you get crabs. That is the danger. Always have a safe political sex. God knows, some of you all know who's won in the future. It's probably Theresa May. But maybe not. It's awful, isn't it? It's all terrible. I mean, I'm meant to come and cheer you up, that's the thing. But I've been depressed for 2 weeks. And that, in terms of you at home, is like over a month. So that is... That's very upsetting. Last week it was Heterosexual Pride Day. What I know is when will it be Men's Heterosexual Pride Day? I don't want to share my Heterosexual Pride Day with women. That's not on, is it? I want just men to celebrate it on their own, maybe in a sauna together. That is what that is. It's quite a small crowd tonight compared to last week, and the week before, I should say, when Vic Reeves was on. I thought I'd show people at home how disappointing it is. I don't know if you can see there at home. I mean, you can't really. It looks quite full because the lights sort of shine and you can't see the vast empty sea behind these. I was looking at the sales figures for this series. And the last show on the 25th of July, which we haven't yet got any guests for, has sold better than tonight already. So that is, I just want both the guests to know that is their pulling power. And talking of my guests for this week and next week, why not? Let's look forward to next week as well while we're here. The first guest I'm talking to, and the only guest this week, is probably best known for his appearance on Alan Carr's New Year Spectacular. Not spectacular, spectacular. It's Nish Kumar, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Nish Kumar. Here we come. Welcome. Sit down, pick up a microphone, talking to that microphone.
Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
Yeah, good. What a hyped up intro. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your first disappointment. I mean, I don't know what this says about me. I'm looking at the crowd thinking, this is a pretty good number. This is a pretty good crowd for Kumar. I'm happy with it.
I'm very excited. It is good. They're quality, not quantity. No, they're not very good. They're not. Next week's audience will be better. We'll see. So, what do you remember about Alan Carr's New Year Spectacular? Why wouldn't it spectacular?
It was specs because he was wearing glasses.
Well, that's not enough, is it?
Well, he did
that's...
another one without glasses, and that was just spectacular. Okay. I think that was what happened. What I mainly remember about it was Danny Dyer was the most drunk man I've ever seen in my entire life before we started recording.
Right.
He turned up absolutely shit faced. Kept trying to have sex with Kelly Brook.
Yeah.
And then at one point, I may have to consult with someone before I could allow this to be released into the podcast. This may just be for the, as you put it, disappointing number of people in the room. This may just be for you guys. But at one point, the cameras were turned off. They were just turning it round before doing an advert break. And just before the cameras went on, Alan Carr just turned to me and Greg Davis and went, "These get wilder every year. Last year, someone got fingered, and then the cameras just turned off." And so, there's definitely one bit of that programme where me and Greg Davis are both just sat there with our eyebrows on the ceiling, just like, "What? Who got fingered?" And we never got another chance where we were just in conversation with him to find out who got fingered.
Oh, was it live then, or was it a pre-record?
No, it was a pre-record.
Was it?
Yeah.
Daddy Dyer turned up not on New Year's Eve.
Daddy Dyer turned up hammered on December 15th.
Fair enough. It should be called, it's just a bad title, Spectacular, because it's spectacular is the word.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And was everyone wearing specs? I don't think so.
No.
It's not even spectacular if only one person was wearing
where
specs.
Where were you on December 15th last year, Richard? We could have used this sort of wisdom back then.
You know, I might try. I'm going to try and get together the crew behind my improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson. We'll discuss that in the next podcast, but I think I might try and also do... It's like a Justin Lee Collins, let's bring back the cast.
Yeah, sure.
So we might do with that as well. I'd mentioned the idea of bringing back the Mark Watson one on Twitter, and then someone tweeted and said, why didn't you get Justin Lee Collins to do it, which I was hoping they wouldn't do because I was sort of slightly taking the piss.
Yeah.
And within 20 seconds, Justin Lee Collins tweeted to say, I will do it.
That's how committed he is to reunions. He will get involved in a reunion for something he has no idea existed.
And then I said, we'd have to bring back... We'll have to do a bring back Justin Lee Collins, which you'll have to go and see if you can bring back yourself.
Wait, so is he... Hold on, is the show called Elementary, My Dear
Mark Watson? Yeah.
That's one of the shittest titles for anything
I've
ever heard.
You were in Alan Carr's New Year Spectacular.
And that tells you everything you need to know about how bad that title was.
And you didn't step back and say, I'll be in this, but you have to change the title.
Can I just say that I was dreading that bit of the interview because I have done some fucking shit in my career. Oh, boy. And I feel like I've really got away with one.
What would you have chosen as your worst thing?
Definitely Blue Go Mad in Ibiza. I did a... Definitely. I was in a hidden camera show with the band Blue,
right,
where they were running a fake bar in Ibiza, and all the people involved... This is absolutely true, right? And all the people involved in the administration of the bar were comedians and sort of performers, a bit like me, Ed Gamble, Sam Pamphilon, like lots of like people sort of my generation were in it. And it was, without question, one of the worst things I've ever done in my life. Like, I like everyone who's involved in it. And the problem is, whenever I do something that's terrible, and whenever people of my school comedic year do something that's terrible, we know that Josh Widdicombe is going to see it. Josh Widdicombe has somehow put into his Sky Plus the names of all of his friends and a couple of words that suggest they're about to do a humiliating television programme. Like, once on Virtually Famous, I found myself on my knees in front of a treadmill eating pork pies with a woman from The Only Way Is Essex. And they put a trough in front of us just in case we vomited. And I really thought, this is the low point. That was before Blue Go Mad and Ibiza, right? And I was like, well, at least, you know, probably no one will see it. And the day it was released, probably a couple of hours after it aired, I got a text message that was a picture of me with my face in a treadmill shoveling a pork pie in my mouth from television's Josh Widdicombe, right? I don't know how the fuck he does it. It's incredible.
It is. Well, that is what modern celebrities like. I recently did one of those Sunday morning TV shows.
Yeah.
Saturday Kitchen, it might have been. And I ended up on the floor on my knees in between Bonnie Langford and a woman from The Only Way Is Essex, moving a man made out of sort of packaging paper around. I thought, this is like a weird thing to have happened. Yeah. So yeah, that's. And then, I was watching Mrs. Merton, which was on the other day, obviously, for horrible reasons.
Yeah.
And she was sort of. Steve Coogan was one of the guests, and she was sort of mocking Steve Coogan for being on a TV show with with the tallest man in the UK and Chris Akabusi. But that's quite classy, isn't it? Compared to what our generation. There you go. Yeah, he's the tallest man in.
Were they eating pork pies on the treadmill? Because that's a really crucial detail.
That is bad. I had to do the other day. I did the Superhuman show, which is a good show. But I don't know if I don't know if I can tell this story. I was up against. I'm going to tell it because there's hardly anyone in.
this podcast is going to be about 15 minutes long by the end of it.
I was involved in. We'll put it out. It'll be fine. It's a Superhuman show. It's a nice show. It's about the Paralympics.
Yeah.
And so I was on with a guy who was an expert wheelchair guy. He's won all the
A wheelchairman. Yeah, I believe that's
what a wheelchair.
A wheelchairman. Yeah.
Going fast on wheelchairs. I've forgotten his name. He was called. David Ware or something is called, because his nickname was the Werewolf.
Yeah.
Which it took me ages to understand. I was sitting there afraid I was going to chip in and go, why do they call you the Werewolf? Because I don't manage to work. I worked it out. We did this stunt where I had to go on like a wheelchair on a machine and see how fast I could go.
Yeah.
And then he was going to come on and he had to go at 33 beats a minute so he'd make a record thing turn around.
Yeah.
And I went on and did it, and I'd never been in a wheelchair or in a wheelchair before. And I thought, I did pretty well. I got it to sort of 29.
Yeah.
And they came down and said, you've done too well. Can you do it again and do less well? And then... And I said, I'm very competitive, I'm not going to pretend. And I was really pleased to have done so well. And they go, no, that's really good. And then the guy came and did it and did about 30. And then he's won 5 gold medals. And then they had to kind of fix it so that then he got 33.
This is going to be the shortest podcast ever. We're just going to come out, we're just going to go, this next guest has drawn a disappointing audience. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Nish Kumar.
Bad though, now I felt like I was part of, like, you know, a quiz show or something like that. When they just made me redo it.
That's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's a really good movie. I was talking to somebody about that the other day. Has anyone here seen Quiz Show? Yeah, of course the nerds have. It's such a good movie. It's got an amazing cast in it. It's a slightly forgotten masterpiece, I think.
We can't use that bit either, because we'll put it out. There was something wrong with the machine or something.
Right, okay.
That made it me good at being
a wheelchair.
I mean, you know, but then I thought, hey, if you know the comedy doesn't work out, all I've got to do is get in an accident of some kind. Just take the legs out. My legs are no good. I thought if anything, my legs were my best attribute because I run and stuff.
But it turns out
just the bit that I do nothing with. Amazing.
This sounds like the plot of an excellent film where somebody tries to get their legs taken out of commission so that they compete at the Paralympics. It sounds like a great movie starring Daniel Day-Lewis or a terrible film starring Adam Sandler. That's how...
I think Adam Sandler, definitely. Yeah. I'm obsessed with Adam Sandler films.
You're only human.
If I have an afternoon off, I will sit and watch Adam Sandler films on Netflix, and there's a lot of them now. There's so many. I watched two recently, and I can't even remember what they were about.
Have you seen Jack and Jill?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Fuck me, that's a shit film. Oh boy, that's so bad. I was watching it thinking, was I in this? Like, it really is a shockingly bad film.
I saw The Cobbler.
What's
in The Cobbler? The Cobbler is... I mean, it's almost good, The Cobbler. They've got an amazing cast in it. It's very predictable, but it's... He's a cobbler, and his dad's got a... His dad was a cobbler.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it's a dangerous thing doing an Adam Sandler film. You can tell it's an American film.
Yeah.
Because if you were in Adam Sandler in England, you would never call any film... The Cobbler.
The Cobbler, yeah, exactly.
very short step we have to take. But he's a cobbler, and his dad was a cobbler. But then his dad had a special machine that he used. So Adam Sandler's new machine's breaking down, so he goes back and uses the old machine, and it turns out that any shoes repaired on that machine, if you then put them on, you turn into the person who owns the machine. Right, so A... A, that only works for people who have the same size feet as you, so immediately it takes it down quite a long way. I mean, it's surprisingly sensitive. It's only slightly racist and a little bit transphobic, I would say, and whereas most of them are full. And they what was the other one? It must have been a different one where they had... or was it the same one? I saw one where he's... Oh, no, the one with David Spade where they God, what's it even called?
Is it Grown-Ups?
No, it's a more recent one. I think it might be a special Netflix one. We should just talk about Adam Sandler all the time.
Yeah.
David Spade's normal and Adam Sandler's a bit crazy and he fakes their deaths.
Right.
And then they go... What's it called?
The Do-Over.
The Do-Over.
Now, the worrying thing about this is that two people in this audience knew that. That is phenomenal.
And so it does this thing. They take over the lives of these other guys who turn out to be gangsters or something, and then they get in loads of trouble. But like, as in most Adam Sandler, they sort of have their cake and eat it by having like gay characters.
Yeah.
But the joke is always like, oh no, oh God, you're going to get, oh, a man's going to kiss me. Oh. And then they now make it sort of slightly right on by going, but then it's a big biker and, hey, it's cool that you're gay, but, I wouldn't want to touch your cock. They've got less bad than they used to be. I
Now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Yeah, but
that's
very homophobic for a film that's trying to...
Yes.
...to promote gay
That's
rights.
Right, that's exactly... That is... But Jack and Jill, the thing that I found most depressing about it is that Al Pacino is in it. Yeah. And there's a bit where, like, Al Pacino... They're in Al Pacino's house. And Al Pacino plays Al Pacino. Right, the actor Al Pacino is playing the actor Al Pacino. So immediately you're like, oh, this could be a little bit like a Charlie Kaufman film. And that notion is very quickly scratched. But there's one point in it where they smash his Oscar And Adam Sandler's one of either Jack or Jill. He plays both. Don't worry about it. He's got range. And one of them says, I'm sure you have others. And he goes, you'd think. And it's like, ow, you're not going to get a second one being in fucking Jack and Jill.
Steve Buscemi's in The Cobbler.
Is he really?
Yeah. And someone else amazing. There's some of them, they have amazing people in them.
What information does Adam Sandler have about all these people that means he can blackmail them into being in his shitty films?
He's, you know, I find him fascinating because he's quite, he could be quite good.
Yeah.
And he is quite good in the films he's good in that are good.
Do you like funny people?
I sort of liked it, and then it go. Then there's a, it's about half an hour too long.
Yeah.
Sort of goes off into it. So he's doing really well, and then it.
But it's just, got some really interesting stuff in it. And Punch Drunk Love is a legitimately great movie.
Yeah.
But, and then you sort of go, I don't know how this is the same person who does this and is then in Click, which is a movie where he gets a magic television remote. The nice thing about these movies is that they've clearly not overthought the premise. It's just the first idea sometimes is your best idea.
It is. You put on someone's shoes, you become them, and then you can take the shoes off and you're not them anymore. I mean, it's sort of like Groundhog Day. A very bad version of Groundhog Day. But yeah, but he's very loyal. That's the thing I like about him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So how else would Rob Schneider get any work if...
Well, unless and until there is another Deuce Bigelow movie. Like, have you seen... Rob Schneider's got a sitcom as well.
Has he?
Yeah, it's like somebody read the Wikipedia entry for Louis. Like, it really is... It's kind of extraordinary. Like, it really is worth checking out.
Anyway, enough about Adam Sandler. We'll wait till he's a guest. Can't wait to talk to him.
I think he might have blown that, Rich.
I might have done... He won't listen to this. Or come on this. So I think we're fine. You live in the house behind mine in Shepherd's Bush.
Directly behind Richard Herring. That is, I moved in there. You talked about this with Stu Goldsmith.
Yeah.
Stuart Goldsmith and I moved to Shepherd's Bush about 2 years ago. And when we first looked at the flat, Stu was like, I think I've been here before. And then the first day we moved in, Stu was like, oh, I've been here before because Rich lives right over there. And I said, where? And he was like, he literally pointed at you sat in your kitchen. Just looked across. I was like, oh, yeah, there he is. There's Herring.
Have you seen me? I walk around a lot quite naked.
Well,
quite
I was
lot.
Actually about to ask you the same thing.
I've never worked out quite where you are, so in which
Well I have, and I have been walking around quite a lot naked in the hope that you would see my wanger, but sadly
so
it appears not.
Stuart's moved. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still there. Yeah. I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
It's like a real window.
Something. Could you tell the people who live in the top flat that their drain is really hanging? I mean, they know. They know because it's hanging over their window. I mean, the drain pipe has come off and it's hanging. But it's been like that for like 2 years.
Oh, really?
And it's really starting to annoy me every time I look out. When I look out my office, which is on the top floor, then I'm just looking directly.
I can't, like, that top flat has had about three or four different people living in it in the time that I've been there. And I feel like now we've got to the bottom of what it is. It's because there's just constantly a rain of sewage falling down outside the back window.
They could lean out the window and, you might need some scaffolding. It'll probably impact on your life. I saw you yesterday in the Westfield, but you didn't see me.
That's right. Where were you? Were you in the Westfield?
You were just by the champagne bar. You were talking to your girlfriend. You looked quite having quite an intense conversation, so I didn't...
Yeah. No. This is really bad. I'll tell you what. It's because I know what that conversation was about. We were having a conversation about we both needed a shit. And we were having a really serious conversation that I would say lasted about 5 minutes about whether we were going to both go for a shit in the Westfield or wait until we got home. That was the serious conversation we were having.
I'm glad I didn't interrupt it now.
Yeah. It really must have ruined someone's glass of champagne. Yes.
I needed a shit as well. I waited till I got home, but thinking about it, it's better to go in the Westfield,
yeah.
Really,
well, then, the
especially
thing
with
then,
your drains.
Then later on... Oh, yeah. But then later I returned the favour, because then later I just saw you walking with Katie and your baby just towards your house.
Yeah.
And I was going to wave, but I didn't. but I did not wave, if that makes sense. So I sort of just had my hand just slowly up here, just like this. And I just thought, I don't think I've ever looked creepier. I also had a full erection. That's also, that's probably why I look so creepy.
So, you know, we keep on missing each other. That's the fun of, it's weird that with that. It was weird when Stuart was living there,
yeah.
And it was like literally we're both doing interview podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
And we
yeah.
could throw stones through each other's windows.
Yeah, well, for a while, didn't you accuse him of throwing eggs?
I did. There were eggs. My garden was egg. That's right. And I think it was the kids next door, but it could have been.
Well, because then our house got egged.
Right.
The front of it on Halloween. Uh-huh. And Stu was like, someone's throwing an egg at our house. And I was like, classic herring. Absolutely classic herring. An egg for an egg.
I wouldn't be able to work out where your house was from the front. I don't know what number you live at. I'd like to point out to anyone listening that Shepherd's Bush, there's not very many eggings. It's a lovely place
to
live.
It's a lovely area.
If you want to buy a property.
If someone was looking to buy a house in Shepherd's Bush, maybe that had lovely views of my dick and balls. I don't know what that does. That'd be interesting to find out what that's done to the value of your house.
That would be interesting to know. I've been egged and a man shat in my front garden.
That was me.
Yeah.
Didn't make it back home in time from the Westfields.
But weirdly, my house is further from the Westfields than your house.
Don't question my methods, Richard.
It's weird, but yeah, I have never seen you in there, but I do like. I do all sorts of things in the kitchen. When I'm on my own in the house, I forget. And because there's some windows now, we had it done up, so there's new windows that I'm not expecting. I think it's probably worse for the people to the side.
Who are really
if they,
getting
if they
the
were
view.
Looking down, they could see all sorts of things going on. No, okay, yes. Let's get straight into some emergency questions before we get to talk about your stand-up shows, which a lot sound very interesting as well, but, you know.
I like the fact that you've declared a state of emergency preemptively. Like I've looked at this guy's Wikipedia page straight to the emergency questions.
There's not much. As I was saying to backstage, you know, the newer comedians, there's not much.
Yeah,
because you haven't done enough interviews to forget what you've said in interviews.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the beauty of the more long established.
But comedians. I would also question some of your research methods, Richard, because when I came into the dressing room, there was an iPad. On the table that was playing a video of Paul Chowdhury. So I think maybe the reason Richard can't find much about me is because he's just been searching for brown comedians. How was it when you were co-hosting The Apprentice, You're Fired?
I played a DVD of you and it was YouTube that was racist, not me. That would have been the next one that came up. I actually did. I tweeted the wrong. I added the wrong.
That's right. You acted,
into,
yeah.
So when I was mentioning this on Twitter, I put at Nishkumar. Sorry, and I realised someone said that's not Nishkumar. Mr. Nishkumar.
I'm Mr. Nishkumar.
So it was the wrong guy. And we'd only tweeted once in 2012. So I don't think he was too bothered by.
No, I don't think so. Lots of people then started going contacting you, being like. Why don't you tweet more? I'm assuming that's not helping. If he's a little bit shy on Twitter, the last thing he's going to need is 50 Richard Herring fans going, "Oi, fucking speak up, mate!"
I made a joke about the fact that I'd booked the other one, and so I was going to have to go through with it. My mum sort of thought, "Is that?" I said, "Oh, you got the wrong Nishkumar then. How's that going to work? Was he a comedian as well?" I said, yeah, there's two Nishkumar comedians, and I got the wrong one. But it's all right, we'll go with this other guy. I had to fly him in from India. Anyway, because people have been nicking my emergency questions, I've started nicking other people's emergency questions.
Who nicked your emergency
questions?
Loads
of people. They do it, and they don't credit me, especially the ham hand one. They can have it. That's why it's gone. It's dead to me, ham hand.
Who's nicked ham hand?
Someone asked Jodie Foster. Someone asked Moby.
Really?
Yeah, people ask all that. I don't know if there's ever Guardian question answer. They are loads
really?
Of my people nick them.
God, I'd love it if Paxman had nicked them.
So here are some emergency questions from lifehacks.io. If you could jump into a pool of something, what would it be?
I think... It would. I watched DuckTales at quite an impressionable age. And so I think there's always been a part of me that's had the ambition to dive into a pool full of coin-based money. I imagine it would be fatal, but what a way to go.
I think if you dove from a height,
into a pool full of coins.
Yeah.
What a way. I mean, he died the way he lived, stupidly.
I always thought it'd be quite fun. Because I travel around with a lot of coins, actually, because I do a collection of all of my of my gigs. I always thought it'd be quite funny to like have someone back to your hotel room and then throw coins and then have to make love in a pile of coins rather than all the films when you've got a drug money in, they throw all their money all over the bed. So I thought it'd be quite funny to have sex on a load of coins, because it would just be like, I would just
really
have to keep on moving, sort of picking coins out of your bum and just off your, when they'd sort of stick to your skin. And it would be quite unpleasant. Yeah, there's 250 quid there in 10p pieces. I never did it. I wouldn't do that because the money is going to Scope. And that is...
You continue to sully your record with disabled people. I because you've talked a lot about dying with all that money in the back. Yeah. I got early last year, I was on tour and I had DVDs. And I've toured on trains because I can't drive. And so I just had a suitcase that just had two pairs of, like, pants, just in case I couldn't get to the Westfield to take a dump. And DVDs. And I just thought, if this train derails, I am going to die looking like my own biggest fan. Like, that is a really bleak way to go.
Yeah. It is, you know, it'll happen to one of us. This is from MarshallJonesJr.com. Have you ever tried sushi?
What the fuck is MarshallJonesJr.com?
There's 100 questions to ask people, and that was one of them. Not even to ask people from very remote places. To ask people from Antarctica or somewhere where there are no sushi restaurants. Have you ever tried sushi? Well, yes.
Yeah. I like the idea that it's from a guidebook of how to talk to Japanese people. Have you ever tried sushi? Good sushi to you.
Okay, this is a question that comes from a previous podcast.
Sure.
This isn't especially for you. Are you circumcised? That is the first part of the question.
No, I'm not. No. As you would know if you ever looked out of your fucking back window.
This really comes to it. This is a question that was asked. I can't even just remember too. Was it David Cross? When you masturbate, do you start away or towards? But it was really for people who are circumcised, that second part.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I start towards. I'll still give you the information. I'm so pleased that I told my mum I was doing this. And she said, oh, yeah, I'll look out for that.
What is... Hello. This is humor. What is the worst rumor you've heard about yourself? This is one of my emergency questions because I've heard loads. If you get because I've heard rumors about myself that aren't anywhere near true, and there's plenty of rumors you could tell about me that are true.
What's the worst? Okay, the worst rumor that I've heard about myself has happened like within the last week and a half. A man on Twitter tried to suggest that at a gig I had said all white people were cunts. And all I can say is, I call it like I see it.
Good.
Yeah, that's the worst room. And then my mother called me up and said, what have you been saying about white people? And I was like, well, why are you searching fucking Twitter? It was at the gig, we talked about this backstage a little bit. I had a bit of an incident at a gig the night of the referendum announcement. I was at the Comedy Store and I was talking about the referendum. I was saying, you know, that I was disappointed with the result, but I don't necessarily cast aspersions on how you vote. And a man told me to go home. Like, that was the night of the referendum. Go home. That is old school. It's like he wanted to be racist and so he asked Jeeves. Like, that's how... And also, I was a bit thrown, so I did say to Croydon. And he did not look amused by that at all. Yeah, and then afterwards there was a guy on Twitter who was saying, you said that the only reason that man was racist to you is because you said all white people were racists. And you go, I mean, he's not disproving my claim. Even if that is what happened, if I said all white people are racists and a man said go home, if anything, I'm just bang on the money. And it was really interesting because this guy on Twitter was contacting me saying, "This was you said this thing, and you said that all people who voted Leave were racist, which I didn't say." And he said, "You said all white people are racist, which I didn't say." And he said, "That's why the guy was racist to you." And you go, "That's weird, because none of that happened." But he's created this whole story in his mind. And luckily, the Comedy Store films all of it said, so we have the video. So I was like, "Well, we sort of have the video." And he was like, "Well, I believe what I believe." And you just go, I mean, we've all got a lot of stereotypes about people who vote Leave, and I'm trying desperately not to believe any of them. But on that night, I did meet someone who was a racist and someone else who was refusing to change their beliefs in the face of overwhelming evidence.
We've all had enough of experts and videotapes. That is not proof to me. But that is chilling and worrying, and nothing like that's ever happened to you before, is that right?
Never. So no, never. Like, never. I mean, I've been told to go home for, like, 15 years or something. Like, it was something where, when I was younger, I grew up in Croydon, which is a shithole, but it is a very multicultural shithole. But then when I went to school, I actually went to school with Matthew Crosby, who will be on the podcast next week. I get it, guys. I get it. And he and I went to a school in a place called Orpington, which in... Are there people from Orpington here? Really?
You actually sold some tickets.
Yeah. Also, the other thing that I'm worried about is you probably shouldn't have cheered. You should have cheered after I said what I was going to say about Orpington. That is always
because everyone in Orpington is racist.
Yeah. But in 1997, Orpington was not the multicultural oasis it is now. And when I first started going to school, there would be people, you know, but it was like part of the ritual there. I'd get off the bus, someone would be like, "Go home." I'd be like, "Fuck you. See you tomorrow, Chris." And like, just what, like, you know, it was all very collegiate. But that hasn't happened to me for years. And it was just a real jarring thing, because it seemed to sort of confirm all of the worst things that we'd been thinking were going to happen. And also, like, it really served me right, because that afternoon I had lunch with my friend and I was like, "Nothing's going to happen." High five, I was like, "Go home," and me just being like, "Shit."
Well, it does seem there's, you know, it's a weird. I made a joke that will go out after the referendum, before the referendum, when Petta came up, who's the duty manager here, and I said, "Oh, you won't be here next week." You know, you kind of go, "Oh, that's, you know, in 3 weeks' time, yes, that might not be that funny a joke."
So
it's, you know, it's strange how it's. Well, it's emboldened people, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's like the plot of X-Men Apocalypse, right? Those people have always been there, but they were just lying dormant. And now this result has kind of awakened them. And that's the problem when I'm trying to talk to people who voted Leave, who I completely respect and did so for completely logical and sensible reasons. The problem is, you have to say, the problem is that because of the nature of the campaign, those people feel like, because we've elected to vote Leave, they now have the right to say these terrible things. And it's a really complicated situation, because there's plenty of people who voted Leave who are not racist and just had problems with the structure of the EU. But there are also plenty of people who voted Leave because they are assholes, and it's a really difficult situation. We're in the middle of it now. Hopefully, when this goes out, everything will be fine.
But do you think that there was an element of people who thought that the vote was Leave or Remain for the immigrants. Yeah. I mean, genuinely, yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, we voted for you to leave. Yeah. Why are you still here? That's what's happening there. That is genuinely...
I mean, I don't know what the truth of this is, but did anyone else read this? Is it true that people, the day after the referendum, there was a, like, surge in people Googling the phrase, "What is the EU?" Yeah. Like, is that true? That's something that I've read. And one of the things that we're slowly realising is that we were all spectacularly misinformed,
yeah,
about what the EU was. Like, and to be honest, there's people who are like, "Oh, the EU, well, they're the people that are forcing you to marry a black." Like, that's what the European Union was. They want your bananas straight and they want you to marry a brown man. And now what we're realising is that neither campaign really educated people about what the European Union was. I mean, David Cameron is one of the shittest prime ministers of all time. Well, you know, when people start reaching for the Neville Chamberlain comparison, that you are historically fucked.
I genuinely tweeted David Cameron the week before when it would look like Leave was going to win before it then changed around, looked like Remain would win. But, he was going to... He was fucking up the country. It was clear that he was fucking up the country, that we were going to lose Scotland, or Scotland was going to go independent. And, I just thought that's your rep. That's going to be your legacy.
Yeah.
That you fucked up the country. And you would... And I think sort of he realised, not because of my tweet, but I think he realised... I think he sort of realised, because in the last week he sort of made a tiny effort to do something about it. But we've had the debate after the vote.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, there was a massive march on Saturday being like, we love the EU. And you're like, cool, but I mean, a week earlier, like, would have been real helpful.
Well, yeah. Fuck. So we're screwed. It's awful. But there's nowhere to go. How about News Jack, though, eh? That's, how did you get that job? And why didn't it go to a proper British person? Yeah.
Well, I mean, as the time that we're speaking, I'm supposed to host the next series of News Jack on Radio 4 Extra in September, but I may well have been extradited by then, so it may well have gone to a nice, good, solid, white British comedian like Ramesh Ranganathan. It may have passed back to Ramesh. Yeah. News Jack is a topical show on BBC Radio 4 Extra, which is an open submission show, so anyone can send in a sketch. And it is, of all the things I've done in my career, one of the things I'm least ashamed of. I mean, I really like it. It's great.
It's sort of, when I started out, there was a show called Weekending.
Weekending, yeah.
It was a sort of similar premise. Though I think, from what I've heard of News Jack, it's sometimes on Radio 4 Extra when I'm driving home. It's definitely more even when... Weekending was on, it seemed very dated, whereas News Jack seems to be written by lots of young people.
Yeah, it does. Like, we get a really interesting pool of writers, and I've done it for, I think, either three or four series now. I think it's three, yeah. But we've people who started out submitting stuff are now being invited into the writing room and are writing for shows like The News Quiz and The Now Show and stuff, and it's a really gratifying thing to see people. And it's also what's sort of great about the BBC. Can you tell I have certain axes that I want to grind? It's one of the things that's great about the BBC, because there is no other structure that exists for just people to just send stuff in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't... It's just an email address, so it doesn't... There's no qualifying factor whatsoever, which means some of the submissions we get are mental.
Yeah.
But the ones that aren't, there's lots of really good writers out there.
But is it all done by email? You don't have like a writers meeting, or is it literally everyone just emails them in?
No, there's two processes. So there's a whole address where people just email over the weekend, and then on Monday there's a writing meeting with a smaller group of writers who've been invited in, but they're all people who started out just sending stuff in blind.
That's kind of what Weekending was like, but Weekending you could come to the non-commissioned writing meeting as well. That was an amazing thing. It's much better when you're in amongst them. I mean, I'd say this is a man who's just literally tipped half of his bottle of water over his face. I was one of the successful. Tried to drink some water and just poured it down myself. Tried to style it out. And then remembered everything was being filmed. And I've got wet trousers.
It's right there as well. It's really...
Oh.
It really looks like you've had a small accident.
But I remember that when we did the Weekending, it was like... We met Peter Bainham through Weekending and Julian Dutton, and amazing people. And lots of those people have gone into enormous success, but some of them haven't. There was one guy who came in, and he was a slightly weird guy, and I quite liked him actually. But he walked in one day, and his trousers fell down, and his trousers were held up with a bit of rope, and that broke. And his trousers, as he walked into the room, his trousers fell down. I'm pretty sure he didn't have any underpants on. So that was those are the kind of people coming to try and get their jokes on Weekending.
I don't know why you're judging him. He sounds like an absolute natural. Did he then subsequently slip on a banana peel? Because this man may be the total comedian.
Yeah. Well, I wonder. I don't know where he is now. That's what I wonder.
And that man's name was Boris Johnson.
It was Stuart Lee. you've done how many stand-up shows in Edinburgh have you done there? Is it sort of
I've done four.
Four. Yeah.
I'm about to do my fifth.
Yeah, and then you're touring with this. So the latest one is Actions Speak Louder Than Words, Unless You Shout the Words Really Loud.
Yeah.
So you've got good titles.
Yeah,
was it last year? Long word, blah blah blah. I'm so clever.
Yep, that was last year's show. That was last year's show. The previous year's show was called Ruminations on the Nature of Subjectivity.
Right.
So that long word, blah blah blah. I'm so clever was a joke callback to that, but. Not enough people see my show for that to work. And so I spent basically like 3 months just being like, why have you called it this? And you go, you explain it to them, people go, oh, you shouldn't have called it that.
And so I was reading about this sort of, I mean, you're kind of an affable comedian rather than a confrontational comedian.
Yeah, no, I'm not confrontational.
Took you a while. Did it take you a while to kind of feel comfortable within that affability, or would you,
I think it's quite hard because if you want to talk about issues like racism and prejudice and all and politics or whatever, you feel naturally that you have to be quite confrontational. Like you know, like comedians who are like that, people like, you know, like Bill Hicks or like Stuart Lee, like who you know, have these kind of, have a sort of slightly acidic tone with the audience. And I was never quite able to pull that off, because I have a pathological need for people to like me. And so I was always fighting against my sort of natural self, I think, the whole time. Because I was, like, you know, I was really trying to be like, hey, fuck you, guys. I've got some books that I read, and I'm about to shove them in your goddamn assholes. Like, I mean, that is not far enough away from the truth for comfort, to be honest with you. That was pretty much what I was going on stage doing. And then one of the things that I realised sort of as I got along is, if you are quite affable and you are, and people do sort of generally like you, they will listen to what you have to say. And so it actually becomes a bit of an asset.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, there's an element where it become, you kind of think, how can these people who are angry about everything continue to be angry about everything?
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if they are successful at being angry about everything. Going, yeah. Oh, I've really got to be cross about all the people coming to see me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the exciting thing about watching Stu as his success has just exploded. It's just every time I go and see him, I'm like, what is he going to be furious about now? And it's always exciting because he always finds something to be furious about.
He does. He certainly does. did you start out in a double act, or was the double act alongside the...
The double act was alongside, so me and my friend Tom Neenan used to do a double act called The Gentleman of Leisure, which was, I don't know why I'm speaking slowly, like I'm expecting someone to woo, about eight people saw that show. We did two Edinburgh shows, and it was like cultural-themed sketch comedy, and it was as successful as you would assume, and that is all I will say of it. It was really good fun. Yeah. Like, and Tom is an amazing writer and performer, and we did these sketch shows that we were like, you know when you listen to interviews by people who are incredibly successful later on in their career, and they're just like, we were just making it for each other. We weren't thinking about the fans, or we weren't thinking about the acclaim. We just made it for each other. We were just making it for each other, and we did end up only making it for each other.
And did you meet at university? You were doing sort of student comedy at Durham University?
Yeah. Student sketch comedy.
Is it still going?
Durham University. The absolute bottom of the Edinburgh barrel. Because the thing is, with the Durham Review is basically the drunk cousin of the Oxford Review and the Cambridge Footlights. Like, it is the shit one of the three. And what was fun about it was that no one had any expectations. So I did 2 years of that, and all our reviews, the first line started with basically, I thought this was going to be absolutely awful, and it wasn't 4 stars. Like, that is basically the tone. Whereas all our friends were in, you know, we were friends with the Oxford Review and the Cambridge Footlights, and they're still people who I continue to be friends with now. And it was great, we'd go and do shows at each other's universities, and every one of the Oxford Review reviews or the Cambridge Footlight reviews would start with, well, this was not Stephen Fry, fuck these shits. Like, people were so angry about it. And but with us, they had no expectations, so it was we had an easier time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, even the Oxbridge ones, though, have not, you know, and now, I mean, when I was at the Oxford Review in 1988, it was, even then, it was like an unfashionable thing.
And
we got kicked, it was sort of still at the point where it was recent enough memory that the Oxford Reviews had been, you know, bolstered and successful for the stand-ups to hate us. And, you know, I had a really horrible time. I got really bullied by all the stand-ups. But, you know, even then it felt like a dying art form. So it's kind of incredible that they're...
It's just still going on.
In a way, it's kind of good, because I think it's a great place for... Students should be doing comedy, trying stuff out, and nobody ever sees it.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, if that any of those sketches were still available, it would be absolutely detrimental to all of our careers. I mean, some of the stuff, like, it's great. Failing in isolation is the only way to improve.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's, I think that's what Edinburgh should be about, as well, I think, for a new stand-up.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's about going up and trying stuff out and working out what you're going to do. So it's kind of nice that... I'm sort of surprised the Oxford Review is still going.
Yeah, still going. Still going strong. They still sell tickets, man. People love to go and hate it. Like, I don't understand the mentality, but people love to be like, I'm going to go, and if it's not literally Rowan Atkinson, I'm going to lose my goddamn mind with these children. Like, what is the mentality that drives someone to be like, I'm going to tell off an 18-year-old for failing to be Stephen Fry, and then they'll know how great I am.
That actually had a massively detrimental effect on me. Because I went up to Edinburgh and really excited. It's the second year I'd gone up. And literally all, you know, we got booked for Late and Live. And all the stand-ups were there, whether they turned up to see us or not. And just gave us a terrible, you know, heckled us. We got on this TV show where Keith Allen, this is the reason I don't like Keith Allen, he came to see our show, heckled, moved some crash mats and punched the theatre manager and left after the first sketch. He's a man who likes to get his cock out a lot in public as well. Wonder when they'll get to him. maybe by the time you're listening to this. And then we went on TV to defend ourselves, and then all the sound, you know, Malcolm Hardy and Keith Allen were there and just and bullied me until I nearly cried on TV.
Oh, my God.
And so then I came to London, and then I thought, you know, all the stand-ups hate me because I'm in the Oxford Review. So it, like, actually set me completely back.
This is a horrible part of my brain, but... Have you still got the footage of that?
I think someone did send me, like, I think the bit of the interview is somewhere, because I think someone at least sent me a picture of me from it. It's like the Muriel Gray Edinburgh Nights thing.
But I think that the attitude that people had, like, I think in the 80s there was a real hostility from, like, you know, the sort of, you know, alternative comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a hostility towards people from Oxbridge. But when we were there, by that time, that hostility had dissipated. Also, we were at Durham, so it's hard to be angry because it's like, oh, you're from Durham. Oh, bad luck, mate. Like, what happened? You didn't get into Oxford or Cambridge? Okay, carry on. Like, so
but
I think
it was. I mean, we were being, you know, we were, I should say, 19-year-old kids, 20-year-old kids being blamed for whether it was right or wrong for everything they'd gone before.
Oh, it's so madness.
It was a strange thing. But it was also, I was thinking about this week as well, but when we did this, they started this fortnightly comedy club in Oxford, in the Oxford Union, in the cellar at the Oxford Union, and we were in that cellar downstairs, and Boris Johnson and Michael Gove were all upstairs doing, you know, doing the proper Oxford Union.
Oh, my God.
Got Armando Iannucci, Stuart Lee, and Al Murray, and me, and Emma Kennedy downstairs, and these people. I mean, and, you know, I wonder whether we should have swapped over, because I don't think we could have done worse running the country, and I don't think we can be as funny as they're being.
But isn't this footage that's come up this week of Gove in, like, a satirical, like, sketch show thing with David Baddiel?
Yeah, I wrote for that.
What?
Yes, Stab in the Dark. We wrote for Tracy McLeod.
Right.
So it was one of my first jobs. It was the first properly paid job I got. So I was extremely... I'd done like 2 or 3 years of stand-up and radio and earned nothing. And all I remember about is I got paid £700 a week and I couldn't believe for 6 weeks.
What was the show?
It's called Stab in the Dark. It was a bit like the 10 o'clock live. You know, it's like three... David Baddiel, Tracy McLeod, and Michael Gove, and they would talk about the news. Michael Gove would interview people, so he interviewed some anarchist or something there was, but I suspect that it was someone pretending.
Right.
That he didn't realise. And we wrote sort of topical, you know, it's just like a clever, satirical look at that week's news, and we wrote for Tracy McLeod. So we never actually really worked with Michael Gove.
Oh my God.
I don't really remember meeting him or seeing him.
Yeah.
Beyond thinking he was a bit of a prick. He was he was a journalist then.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had several opportunities to kill him. and I have not taken any of them. So I feel I've let the country down. And it might have been worth the 20 years in prison. I mean, you know, if I'd killed him at university, I'd be out by now. So...
God, that was a really dark thought. Imagine if you went back in time and killed Michael Gove and then waited to see what happened, and it was just we were still sat here. Like, it had not affected anything.
It probably wouldn't affect them. Well, we'll see. You might be the Prime Minister by the time you hear this.
I think I've got more chance of being Prime Minister than Gove at this point. Like, I think he might have fucked it.
Well, you know, there's some trust issues with him on there, but he never did that in Stab in the Dark. He never stabbed him, weirdly. He never came in and took Tracy McLeod. Said, this is your shit. We're not friends anymore. Poor little Michael Govar. I saw him in the Westfield as well. He didn't acknowledge me either. He was with his kid.
Really?
This is the most... I talked about it recently. It's not funny anymore because now MPs have been murdered, but it's... but... At the time before that had happened, you know, everyone loved it when I talked about smashing a bottle of beer into Michael Gove's head, how the world has changed. But I saw him, I was sitting in the little tapas bar up on the first floor.
Oh, yeah, I know. Nice. Well. Yeah, I've taken a few shits around the corner from there.
I was having some tapas with my wife and a beer, and Michael Gove and his two kids walked past, no security.
Oh,
and
right.
I couldn't go, hey, Rich, good work on stabbing up, man. 20 years ago, can't remember. Just walked past me like I was a piece of shit. And I was just amazed that there was no security detail on him at all.
Yeah, I mean,
because he's like a, you know, he's in the cabinet and everything, yeah. So you'd think he would be. So, but I'd have had to murder him in front of his own kids. I reckon I could have done it. And then I wouldn't see my daughter grow up. It would still have been worth it. It's not fun. It's generally not. See, it's not funny anymore. That's yeah, fuckers ruining comedy. So
that is the worst consequence.
Yeah, it is. good. I'll ask an emergency question because I've got myself. If they could have heard the racist stuff I was saying backstage, they'll have to buy a badge to find out about that. If you had to choose between dating a woman who was a 6-foot-tall vulva. Or a woman who, instead of having a vagina, had a tiny woman in there. Like, it would be inside her, where a genitals
were. Oh, so it would just pop out like a cuckoo clock.
Yeah, she would come out and, like, what are you doing? What's going on? Which of those two would you choose?
So it's either the giant vulva.
It's a giant vagina, vulva, whatever you want to call it. Vulva would be more accurate. 6 foot tall. It's not got arms, it's got false arms, though. So you could wear a dress. In public, but it would just be a big vulva. Or a woman who, instead of having a vagina and vulva genitals, had another woman inside peeking out. But she's small.
What's the mechanics of... You can't...
I don't know, it's crazy, isn't it? doesn't make sense, does it?
I think.
What's the mechanics of what?
Like, how you presumably you would not be able to have intercourse with the woman who has another woman, with the sort of Russian doll situation. You wouldn't be able to have sex with that woman.
It's not all about sex, Nish.
Says the man who's just asked me that question.
It's not about sex, it's about dating.
I would...
Which would be the more interesting date. You'd be very presumptuous that it's going to get that the woman who's interesting enough to have another woman in there instead of genitalia. I think it would work. Like, she would be, if you really pushed hard, the woman would pop out.
What if you did like some sort of a downstairs Heimlich maneuver?
Yeah, the woman would pop out, and then it would be just like a woman, little woman standing there. But you could easily just push her back in again.
Is this a sort of conjoined twin situation where they look exactly the same, or is it just a completely
different
woman?
It's a different woman, obviously. That was a waste of your 20 questions that you have. Coming to an answer.
I think I would go with the double woman situation.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I just think that the world is not ready for an Asian man to be in a relationship with a giant vagina. I just think that in 2016 we're not ready for that. Yeah. And also that technically you would, if you had sex with the woman with another woman within her, you that would constitute a threesome.
Yeah, it would.
And you would be able to brag about that.
Yeah.
It's not funny when they take it seriously, is it? Not funny when they take the emergency question seriously.
Okay, I'll ask you another one. Not going to ask that. That's rubbish. That's not even mine. Have you ever seen a ghost?
I've never seen a ghost.
Yeah.
But if I'm alone in my flat, I immediately assume that there is a ghost.
Yeah.
I am scared of absolutely everything. And, I mean, now it turns out it might not be a ghost, it's just your reflection from your back room where you're doing unspeakable things to yourself.
Yeah, it could be. Have you ever been in the vicinity of a Bigfoot but not seen it, but sensed it?
Yeah. I've seen some things in the Bromley Wetherspoons that I think would... Sometimes when you're in the Bromley Wetherspoons, you see some creatures in there, you think, that could be a Bigfoot.
I asked you how sensitive your nipples were backstage. It was a great answer. It's worth becoming a badge answer.
It was a really great
answer.
It
was really good. It's worth paying the pound a month. If you pay your pound a month and then just stop paying it, you can still access the secret channels.
Why are you giving them suggestions to hack your own system of earning money?
Because we're not. I reckon they'll put it. They'll be so impressed with what they see that they'll carry on paying the pound. But you never know. No one ask you that. No, we'll ask you. Which is worse, bestiality or necrophilia?
Define worse.
which do you think should have a bigger punishment in law? I think this came out of having sex with Dave Cameron having sex with a dead pig's mouth, which yes. is now not the worst thing he's done. That is now we look back with a sense of nostalgia to that.
Yeah.
Why didn't we just give him a series of animal heads and just say, David, instead of worrying about policies and stuff, just stick your cock in as many of these as you can.
If he did it,
yeah.
Which I don't. I'm still not 100% convinced he did, but I'm willing to believe it because it's too funny to not dismiss it. Do you think that when he was that photo of him holding the pig, which will now be his political epitaph? Do you think while he was holding that pig, he was thinking, I really wish I hadn't fucked a pig? Because if that comes out, this photo is going to really land me in the brown stuff.
His face does look a bit like he's thinking, this wasn't a good idea.
I think that necrophilia is worse.
Right.
Because there isn't even the hint that you have sought to obtain consent. That's why I think it's worse.
Yeah, but bestiality, can an animal consent? I mean, that is, unless you're Dr. Doolittle, how are you hoping to garner the consent
now,
of
an
animal?
Now, that is an Adam Sandler remake I want to see. It's Adam Sandler as Dr. Doolittle, where he fucks all the animals.
All right, I'll move on to something. I'll move on to a very different subject. Should penis transplants be allowed?
Yeah. Why would they not be allowed?
Well, because
well, I mean, as long as the person has died, that is getting. As long as you're not you're going all about, chopping you're all people's about, dicks off,
you're all about people being alive and consenting. That's what. The person would probably be dead who's transplanted. I mean, if you're talking about penis transplants from living people, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, that's not okay. I will go out on a limb. I don't care who I offend. I don't think you should cut people's dicks off and then stick them onto your own dick. That's just my opinion.
Are you envisaging that the penis transplant is an addition to your own penis?
Yeah. It's like when you put the thing on the back of your snooker cue. Like, it's like that. You just
but your own penis is becoming the back of the penis cue.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. But you just screw it in. If you're just trying to either have sex with a long vagina person, woman, or if you're just trying to execute a particularly difficult plant.
If you could have any animal's penis transplanted onto you, which animal's penis would you take?
I'm going to go horse.
Okay.
I would have a horse penis transplanted onto the end of my own penis. Well, because the thing is, obviously, if there's a horrific circumstance, I think there's no questions. If somebody has ticked that, I don't believe that box exists on the organ donor card at the moment, but if that is the case, but if you're a crazy rich guy and someone dies and you just buy their dick, you would definitely attach it. You know, I can see people doing that. Either you attach it as an extension to your own, or you put it just beside it, so it's like your one has a little mate.
I think it's a swap situation. I don't think...
You think it's a swap?
You're very attached to your own penis.
Yeah.
But in your scenario, the horse penis, the sensitive part of your own penis, the glands, will surely be covered by a horse's penis anyway. So all you've got is your penis. And I would imagine the horse's... I don't know, I haven't seen your penis yet. But I would imagine the horse's penis would be wider than Nish Kumar's penis.
Yeah, it's
no
substantially.
Offense. So what it would be is like a mushroom effect that you would have... Your penis and then the head, and not just the head of the other penis, but the shaft and then the head of the penis. So that would be a very strange-looking penis. I would rather just have the horse penis than a Nish Kumar horse, you know, hybrid penis.
It would definitely be a talking point at a urinal.
Yeah. What about having half of your penis cut away lengthways and then the other half replace with like sort of Two-Face in Batman or whatever it is, but it's two cocks.
Which is the bit that they never really covered in The Dark Knight. What happened to Harvey Dent's penis?
Yeah.
Because did that mean that half of his dick became evil?
Well, that's my other question about penis transplants, is what if you get the penis of an evil person transplanted onto you and it retains the memories of what it did before?
Now you've absolutely written an Adam Sandler film. That is perfect. And it would be called something like Richard's New Johnson. Like, it would be called something like that. And it would be that would be a plot where Adam Sandler gets Hitler's penis transplanted onto his own groin and he suddenly has a fondness for Aryan women. Too much for the audience.
Yeah, well, I think we've already gone to the point that was too much for this audience, and they're still trying to recover from some of the earlier stuff. What is the best museum you've ever been to? Let's forget about penises. What are you so obsessed with penises for?
Yeah, you're right. I would say it's the Penis Museum.
In Iceland.
My favourite museum is, Tom and I did a show where we did a fake tour of the British Museum. Where we build it as a comedy show, and because anyone can give tours of the British Museum because it's technically owned by the people, which technically makes us all complicit in all of the crimes that resulted in all of those objects being in the museum. So we would give a fake tour where we'd set it up so it looked like a tour, but it was a comedy show within all of this. So we'd do like a sketch about the Rosetta Stone next to the Rosetta Stone, but because it looked like a tour, people would just join the tour.
Nice.
And one man who had just joined the tour turned to a person who he didn't know, but who turned out to be one of our friends who was also producing the show for us, and just went, "These guys don't know anything." He was really upset for us.
Oh. So the British Museum is your favourite museum?
Yeah, because it's the only one I've done a comedy show in. Until I do my inevitable stand-up comedy Netflix special at the Natural History Museum. What I really wanted to do is just walk around the British Museum going, "That belongs to my ancestors. That belongs to my ancestors."
When you're touring, do you not go and visit museums around the country and tourist attractions, or are you just in and out?
No, what I generally tend to do is I go and watch movies.
Right.
I watch a hell of a lot of movies just on my own with just me and just some pensioners and just a couple of crazy looking people. That's what I like to do. So I've got a working knowledge of the cinemas in most mid-range towns in Britain.
Yeah.
That's how I like to kill time. What do you do?
I just try and sleep now mainly. I try and get to the place and get out as quickly as I can. we used to go to museums and stuff, and used to so it's cuz sometimes it's nice to look around the town if you get there early enough to look around the town and see if there's anything that is amusing. I think if you can give local references that are quite obscure, that you could only have seen if you'd walk around the town, that can sometimes be quite a funny thing to do. But I can't bother to do that everywhere I go. It's too much work, so I don't do very much anymore. But like some people, I was talking to this, but Vic Reeves likes to go to museums and go on walks and stuff, and Stuart used to like to go hiking up mountains and stuff, and I was always very much like, "Can we just go to sleep?"
That is the more interesting way of touring.
Yeah.
But, you know, because it turns out the Leeds Odeon is not substantially different from the London Odeon, so you're not really getting the local experience.
But that's what the country's like now, I think, as well. I mean, yeah, I think that's, you know, every city is the same. That's why, like, on the drive to places, we would sometimes stop off and go to a terrible tourist attraction. But, like, every city, nearly every city, is now just the same place. When you go into the town centre of it.
It is really...
Same load of shops. You know, Norwich is a bit different than some of the cities.
Yeah. Hull is a bit different, but in a not good way. Hull really looks like a sort of dystopian... Like, it's like the Demolition Man. Like, it really does, like, you get out and you're like, "Oh my God, this is Road Warrior." And then I got there and I did the gig and I sort of said that, and they all were like, "Yeah." So, wow. The people of Hull have no civic pride whatsoever.
Got the fish trail in Hull. Have you been?
What's
on
the fish trail?
It's a trail of fish that you can walk. along. But they're not like, you know, they don't renew it with fresh fish. It's like fish in the ground that you can walk along and go, "Oh, there's a fish." No, it's still there. I haven't been, you know, in the old days, we used to do things like that. I was going to ask you a great question, one of the emergency questions then. Nah, it's gone. Let's just leave it in. This is what the emergency questions are here for, to stop this embarrassed silence. But I can't remember what I was going to... I thought there's a one that's going to follow on. No, it's gone. It's screwed. I know what it was. If you had to go on holiday with one of the spitting image puppets, which one would you choose? Bearing in mind that the puppet will choose the holiday. destination.
Right, okay.
And that you will also have to take the voiceover artist and the puppeteer with.
So we're talking like sort of mid-80s political figures.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there were some other, you know, entertainment people on there.
I reckon
it's probably before your time. Did you watch Spitting Image?
Not really.
No.
I'm a little bit I'm a really young guy, Richard.
No, you're...
I was you know, I was mainly into Captain Planet. But anyway. I would go with Roy Hattersley.
Okay, yeah.
I just reckon he's got the look of a man who knows how to holiday well.
Yeah. There's a lot of spittle you would have to.
Yeah, you would
that
have
was,
to.
That was
you
what
would
that
be...
puppet mainly. Remember, it's the puppet, not the actual person.
Yeah,
that you're going with.
I think you'd be in a hot country and have Roy Hattersley just gobbing on you to cool
true,
you down.
Work, but Roy Hattersley's choosing the holiday destination. The puppet of Roy Hattersley. Would he choose a hot country? I don't think he would.
No, I don't think
he's quite
he would.
Fat.
No, I think I'm going to Norway with Roy Hattersley's puppet.
He's spitting ice onto your face, basically, is what's happening.
That'd be an interesting anecdote.
good. I'm satisfied with your answers. Had a nice time. what do you think the best place to go out in Shepherd's Bush is?
The best place to go out in Shepherd's Bush.
Yeah, do you go and eat in Shepherd's Bush? You go into Soho and stuff. We've established that backstage.
Yeah.
I don't like to travel very far anymore.
There's a great place called Mr. Falafel in Shepherd's Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Which is absolute... Why did someone just laugh at me saying Mr. Falafel? There is a place called Mr. Falafel.
It's a funny name.
It is absolutely delicious falafel. It's really good. It's in Shepherd's Bush Market. There's no joke here. It's just fucking delicious. You know, sometimes when you eat bad falafel, it's like, oh, this is just like sawdust. But this one, top class falafel. That's where I love to go and eat.
Okay.
Where do you go and eat in Shepherd's Bush?
We go down to the way. I like a wasabi Thai.
Oh yeah, I had dinner there today.
I like it. Do you? Yeah, it's nice,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, had a shit in their toilet as well. I don't know what it is about my something has happened to my bowels.
Yeah.
When I got up the morning of the referendum and I saw the result, I immediately had violent diarrhoea, and my stomach has not quite been the same. Like, I have whatever Brexit is now a condition that I am experiencing south of the border.
Yeah.
Like my. Yesterday's night's dinner really voted Leave in a big way.
yeah, that might be true for me as well. That might be one of the side
Well, because I talked to a couple of my friends and they were like, yeah, I've had the same thing. And I'm trying to establish if this is a real condition. Or to be honest, the friends that I talked to, I had dinner with them the night before the... so it may well be we just had a suspect Nando's.
Out. We can find out.
Has anyone else in the audience had diarrhoea since the vote?
Yeah.
Yes! There are a couple There's of people who've had it.
There was just one person that's bad in it when you shout out, yeah, thinking everyone was going to do it. And it was just our little trick and way of finding out that you have had diarrhoea. I think I might be looking at the wrong person, but...
That's also a perfect metaphor for the Remain campaign. You spoke up thinking you were part of a crowd. No, you were not.
Cool. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. I think we're going to have to, you know... draw it to a close so we can talk to the other bloke from your school. it's like the new Eton, isn't it?
It's
dominating the media.
St Olav's Grammar School has really...
Oh, yeah.
Are there people from the school here? Really?
I mean, what are the chances?
What? You went to Newstead then Olav's? Newstead is the girls' school around the corner, whose alumni include Josie Long.
Wow.
What year did you leave? 10 years ago.
You can't remember when you left school. Are you lying? Are you trying to impress us by pretending you went to the same school as Nish Kumar? It's the worst kind of Munchausen syndrome I've ever seen. I can't follow it through. Why don't I just say what year I left school myself? 10 years ago, was Nish a kind of hero at the school when you left?
Yeah.
Was Matthew Crosby a hero at the school? Oh, Deb Morse.
Well, did they tell tales of the 1997 production of Waiting for Godot, which starred Matthew Crosby and me? No? All right, carry on.
Which one were you?
I was the boy.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was the boy.
That's the worst part.
It's the worst part. Yeah.
What part was Matthew Crosby?
He was Godot. It was a very controversial production, yeah. We changed things up and we had Godot come in at the end. It was a revisionist Godot. It was very much Adam Sandler presents Waiting for Godot.
Let's wrap it up there. We will see. I'll talk to Matthew Crosby at Waiting for Godot next week. That's mainly what I'm going to do. We'll find out the truth about your portrayal of the boy. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Nish Kumar. Listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Nish Kumar. The music is by Pess. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide. Thank you to everyone at GoFastStripe.com. Thank you to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre. You've all been very lovely. Thank you to George for recording this in lieu of my producer Ben having some proper work. Thank you to my producer Ben Walker. Thank you also to everyone at Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Fast Stripe Productions. That's who's made this for you. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this, check out richherring.com/gigs. Check out gofasterstripe.com. Check out gofasterstripe.com/badges. There's lots of ways to pay back for this if you are so inclined. Or just tell your friends about it. Or just keep it yourself. That's what I do. Yeah. I know what kind of person you are. You make me sick. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.